how we find ourselves. That's a lot, I know. Let's see if we can get there, though. They're kind of all tied together somehow. You know, we hear the term sometimes for 20 years, you know, when the student is ready, the master will appear. You know, and I think about that all the time. Oh, where am I? I'm ready. Where is this master? And we look everywhere for him. We go to the body, mind, spirit, and meetup groups and everything else. But we're not going to find the master. There's nothing wrong with those things. They're fun. I like them just as much as the next person. But that's not where the master is going to be. When I was 26, 27, I lost everything that really mattered to me. My wife left and took the kids to 900 miles away. I stopped talking to my parents and one of my sisters. I was in debt, big debt. Had a car that was 20 years old. That's it. And I kind of went back to Michigan away from all my family and stuff and went back to where all my friends and things were. And I had pretty much just given up. Like, everything that had brought any happiness to me before was just gone. I had nothing. I had nothing left. You could have replaced me with a lump of coal or something, and all I did was stay on one of my sister's couches and watch the Doors movie over and over again. I don't know why, but that's what I did. And I didn't have a job, didn't have nothing, so, you know, I finally had to get a job eventually, so I did. But I just couldn't pull myself together. Eventually, I thought, you know, this is too tough. I can't do it. I need to go talk to somebody. I need to find a psychologist or something and figure out what to do. And I hadn't been to a psychologist before. Well, that's not exactly true. I went twice when I was a teenager. And if you ask me about that on a separate occasion, I'll tell you and we'll all have a good laugh. Because that's a good one. But when I'm sitting there, you know, we're talking, and I said, look, you ask me any question you want, I'll tell you the truth, and then you tell me what to do. And she goes, that's not how it works. I think you know that. I really didn't. I hoped that it worked that way, I guess. I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what to do. You know, so I was still looking for that master, looking for that answer. And I found a lot of great teachers, and I've been led the right places, I think, at the right time. You know, Connie, for me, that is the best teacher that I've ever had. It might not be for you, but it is for me. That's definitely who my teacher is supposed to be. If I go a little bit, start going off track, she'll either see how far I'll go or she'll pull the rein gently and get me back on track. But I am willing to also listen and be led too, and think about what it is she's telling me and see if that really applies to me, if I can understand it and what she's telling me and see if it makes sense. But that's still not what this saying is talking about, because it's not about being a student of spiritualism or geometry or something else. That's not the master we're looking for. So what is it talking about? It's talking about being a student of life. And that's what every single person is. Every single person is a student of life, whether they want to be or not, because they're alive and because they can think. So out there, in here, that is what our school is. It's this lifetime. You don't need a college degree, or you don't need anything else. You have everything that you need to experience it just within yourself. And that master that you're looking for, that's the inner master that's inside of each one of us. And we can look everywhere else for it, but you're not going to find it until you start looking inside. Once you start looking inside, you're going to find them there. So that must mean that you're ready. You know, so how do we find this inner master? How do we find where he is? How do we look for him? And it has a lot to do with looking inside of ourselves, evaluating experiences and things that we've had, contemplating things that we hear, other people's experiences. This inner master really is what is called the philosopher's stone, or the stone of the wise, or the alchemist's gold. I didn't used to think that that was the case. I thought, no, there's more to it than just that. It can't just be that. But, you know, sometimes we take words, we're taught words, and we just take them for, that's what it is, that's the sky, that's the a door, that's this and that. But sometimes words have, like, they mean other things that I thought, like, for me it was doorknob. Like, growing up, oh, that's a doorknob. But I never put the thing together that it's a knob on a door. Right? It's a doorknob. I see where they got that name. Okay. So the Philosopher's Stone, it really is telling us what it is and how to get it. It's about becoming the master of philosophy. And to become that, you have to look at the world, look at yourself, look at the things, and think about things. You know, this book is a book on alchemy here that I have here, and I was just opened it up and was just reading a little piece, and I'll show you why I changed my mind. But it says, "Now ye that will this science pursue, learn ye to know false men from true. All true searchers of this science of alchemy must be full learned in their philosophy. With great patience thy do proceed, trusting only in God to be their speed." And there's other texts in here where it'll say, to get this stone, you can't seek wealth and to be grand and to be famous and to be all these things. And to me, it's because it's like you have this philosopher's stone, you're finding it, and the second that your ego takes over, it turns to sand and it's gone. That's it. So when you're seeking all these other things, it's gone. It just disappears. It leaves on its own. It's that mysterious, that hard to find, that hard to grasp. And it's that ego that really traps us from finding it. So we have to kind of work on that piece of ourselves and to see when it's telling us, you're the greatest, you're the worst, you're everything in between. And at some point come to a place where you just are. I'd like to talk a little bit about manifesting for a minute. Like, I believe that manifesting things work. I've had things come to me that are just incredible things. Like, oh, I want this. Boom, there it is. Some strange way it comes. I know that it works. But I always wondered, why does it work? And how can I figure out, how can I understand better how it works? And it doesn't have to be from a scientific perspective, really. I just wanted to have a better understanding of how I think it works. And, you know, if you look in the Kabbalion, which is the philosophy of Hermes Trismegistus, the thrice great. He was not just once or twice great. Thrice great. So he must have been pretty good. But, you know, these philosophies that they have in here, the first one, and they're trying to put it, the all, this God that exists out there, is really, truly unknowable. So his teachings, they try to put it into a way that we can quantify it and understand it in some form or other. So the way that they describe it is that the all is a universal, infinite, living mind. So they're saying that God is this giant mind, and that everything that exists is this mind's thoughts. And then they go on to say that there's this law of correspondence. So we always hear, as above, so below as above. So to me, that makes me go, I have a mind too. And it's like this other mind. And my mind can also create. And so how does a mind create? A mind creates by thinking about things. But I was thinking there must be more to it than just that. And so another correspondence is the law of vibration and the law of opposites. Everything has an opposite, but it's always on this scale. And if we take love and hate, let's say, for example, let's pretend those are opposites. I don't know if that they truly are, but let's say that those are the opposites. when we feel hate and anger in those type of emotions, those emotions feel powerful to me. They feel more powerful to me than this love energy does. Like it's really just rah. I mean, I think it's because it's so condensed. It's so internal to us. That anger that we get, it's really internal. It's like we condense it down. It's like this brick that's just there. And man, it feels like, man, this is powerful. And love on the other spectrum, I realize why it doesn't feel so strong. It's because love expands out away from us. It's like anger is condensed, love goes everywhere. Love encompasses the whole world. It's more than just inside of yourself. You're really sending that out. And so kind of the way that I think that manifesting works is we think of something that we want. We know that we understand and trust and know that it can happen because as above, so below, like the trust has to be there. And we charge it with this emotion. And it seems to me like that emotion is really the driving force behind it. So when we get really angry, we're really putting something out there that is going to cause something to come back to us that we probably don't want. But if we get that love vibration and we're on the other end, we're putting something great out there and we're going to get things back that are what we want. I never knew what I wanted. I mean, I've wanted a couple things and I got them here and there, but in general, I just don't know. And I've been thinking back, how did my life change from this person that had given up on everything to what it is now? Because it's different. I mean, things change just like that. I can guarantee you that. Things can change just like that. And I was thinking back, well, if things manifest and law of attraction and all these things, how did that work for me? Why did things ever change for me? And I met my wife that I have now, and I wanted to do good for her, but I had also given up on God when I had given up on everything else. I'd given up on the idea of a Christian God. So I really had nothing. And I was reading a lot of books and stuff at the time, and some things I couldn't understand, and this one author was always referring to Buddhist thought and things, and I didn't know anything about that. And I got a book on Buddhism, and I started reading it. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, yeah, hey, that's what I believe. Hey, that's what I believe. Hey, that's what I believe. And I found all these things, and I go, wow, I didn't know that. And, you know, one of the main Buddhist things is think for yourself. We'll tell you something. Don't just take it for granted. Think about it, research it, look in your mind, look at your experience, see if it holds true for you. If it does, then incorporate it into your life. So I had been doing, so I really liked it anyways. I really fell in love with that religion. And there was a meditation that I would do that was just in this book. I mean, I had no idea about law of attraction, none of these things, about spiritual thought. I just wanted to be a better person and I wanted to be happy. And there was this meditation that you would do where you would sit and you would become the Buddha. The book that I had was called Awakening the Buddha Within. So that really is our God self inside of us. And we see ourselves as the Buddha. And we put ourselves in the Buddha's mind. And then we see the people that we love in our life behind us. And we send them love from our Buddha heart center. And then we see the people next to them that are the acquaintances that we run into the supermarket and at the gas station. And then we have the group of people that we have a problem with or that we don't like so much, or and we send love to them. I found that the people start moving around into different categories and you start realizing, oh, this, why I didn't care for this person is because of something that actually I did that caused that and I was in the wrong or things like that. And the other thing that I was doing at the time was just inviting light to come through my body, seeing the spiritual light flowing through my body and becoming that. I wasn't attempting to manifest anything specific or anything like that, and everything for me changed, every single thing. Miracle after miracle, there isn't enough time to tell you everything, how my life has changed. So I don't know that actually trying to manifest is as important at just trying to be light and love and trying to be the best that you can be. Because the other things are going to come on their own, and the right things are going to come on their own. The things that are meant for you are going to come on their own. We don't have to try to force those things. We talk a lot about work here, spiritual work. You'll hear Connie say, oh, yeah, they're doing their work. What that work is it's the hardest work you're ever going to have to do in your life, but it's the most rewarding work you're ever going to find, because it has to do with looking at yourself. And we do that a lot here by some of the people at class. They'll sit by themselves in the dark in their closet. When you're all alone and you're in the dark, you can't see anything. You have no other senses but your mind left there. And it's hard sometimes to look at what's in there. Sometimes I don't feel like going to sit in there, maybe because something's there that I'm not ready to look at yet. I'll sit sometimes for months, and then all of a sudden I just can't do it anymore for a while. I don't know why. I don't know what's there. It'll come out when it's ready. But that's the work that we're talking about, and that's hard work. Because we have to face things sometimes that we don't like. We all go through these trial times where things aren't always great. We go through times that are tough. But what we have here really is a way to think about the world in a way that can make your life fulfilled and good and positive. You know, the Buddha couldn't do anybody's work for him. Jesus couldn't do anybody's work for him. Connie can't answer every question I have. Nobody can, except that own inner master. And we all have, this is how it's different for all of us, and why we have to go with our own inner truth for ourselves. Now, if I tell you that's white, the color of that stone right there is white. It's white to me. I have no idea how you perceive it. We all call it white. Do you perceive that exactly the same way as I do? If I say God, what does that mean? Everybody here has a different interpretation of what that means. It's what their own life experiences have brought them. That's what God means to them. It's something totally different. You could say, oh, my God is the Egyptian goddess Isis. She is love. She is the most beautiful thing that ever existed. That's, she created everything. She gives us all this goodness. You know, that's the same God. It's the same energy. It's exactly what Connie was just saying. It's exactly the same thing. It's like Shakespeare saying, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Right? It can be called anything if we're talking about the same thing. And so in that way, you have your own experiences. I don't have your experiences. I've never lived your life. You've never lived mine. We can share. That's what this is to me. This isn't a sermon. This is a conversation, a one-sided conversation, but a conversation. And, you know, that's what this is really about. It's about sharing with other people, comparing, thinking, figuring out how we think things work, trying to make everything better for ourselves and for other people. And so what it really takes is becoming what I would say is the hermit. You hang your head and you put your lantern up and you go and look in the dark corners of your mind that you don't want to really look at too much, as much as you can, and keep on going back and trying again and again. You know, there's a lot of techniques for doing that kind of stuff. And I've heard two sayings in the last month that really stuck with me. One was on a Wednesday night class, and the saying was, imagination does not mean imaginary. And so, you know, children have imaginations, and they see stuff and they experience stuff, but what they're really experiencing are things. Our thoughts are things. We can use our imagination to help us. We can go and sit and go, oh, I have to forgive myself because I did something pretty bad. And how do I get over that? And we can take ourselves on a guided meditation where in our minds we're walking through the woods and we come upon Indians with this fire and we unload our burdens into this fire, and we let them burn away, and then hopefully they go away. We forgive ourselves. We try to see the situation in a different way. Hopefully we've learned from it. Sometimes it won't go away the first time. It's kind of like your ego is like a weed, and you're just whacking it down. And, oh, I cut it off, and it pops back up again. And 2 months, 3 months down the road, a year later, damn it, it came back. And then you go, oh, I think I got it this time, and you cut it down again. You go, I found the answer. And then you didn't, and then you go, oh, it comes back in. And then finally you grab it by the roots and you rip it out. And to me it seems, from my experience, that the root is always going to be something to do with your ego for some reason. You need people to like you, you want people to not like you. This, that, I don't know. It's always something to do with ego. It's always trying to trick you in some way. And man, it is crafty too. But I think that that's what we need to do. And the other saying that somebody said was, trust is the new luck. And to me, I could tell right when the person said it, I knew it came from Spirit, because that just sounds exactly like how Spirit would say something. Trust is the new luck. And it has to do with trusting, belief that these good things can happen. It has to do with changing into all that, and then it will seem like luck that all these things are happening, but you're actually part of the process of creating it. And so these things, it's like a big wheel. It goes around and around and around. These problems come up, we deal with them, they go away, we get closer to who we truly are, we find these things. I've been thinking about these terrorists a lot lately. And I always was like, yeah, go blow them up, you know. Just people are like, no, send them love. And be like, you are so naive, what are you talking about? You know, that's the way that I thought. But I have a new way of thinking now. I'd been thinking the other day about Daniel in the lion's den. And they put him in there, and all these hungry lions are there, and they leave him alone. They don't eat him over the night. And it was like he was a high vibrational person. He was a spiritual person. So he had this energy that just exuded this calmness, this love. And he probably had close contact with angels and these other spirit guides that would come. And I think that vibration calmed those lions' minds, where they didn't need to. Now, this is if it's a literal story. If it's a parable, then it's probably about calming your own inner lions. But it brought this calmness that just made the lions not want to eat anybody. They just wanted to lay there and do whatever. And I think somebody mentioned it, but I didn't really understand it till I got home and was thinking about it more. And it's like we can bring that same vibration to the earth, to other people. If you ever watch like those shows like Scared Straight, where they send a kid to jail to see what it's like, and they're yelling at him, man, these kids are tough. But they always end up breaking down, and it's always because of love. It's like love always cracks the shell. And as soon as love hits them and they actually feel it, that's what they were looking for, they break down and they cry. And they release all this anger and hate. And I think that is what we need to do to these terrorists, is just send them this loving energy, and hopefully they get what they want and they won't be as angry and as violent. On the way here, I invited Spirit to give me some thoughts and things, and this thought popped up that I hadn't had before. And it was about how the all is this mind, right? It's this infinite mind. We're the microcosm of that. We have our own mind. But we live in this greater mind. And it's like we're like cells in this giant mind. Each one of us is like a cell in this giant mind. And when we become more positive and a high vibration, these thoughts that we are part of in this giant mind become more positive. And the mind, the giant mind, starts to change what is created from it. And that is how I feel that we can change things, because we can, we are part of that living infinite mind's thoughts. And so the higher vibration, the higher positive, the more love that we give out, the more we can change how that mind thinks. I just wanted to read one other thing in closing. I had listened to this song maybe hundreds and hundreds of times, but I really only heard it for the first time last week when I was listening to it. And it's about, to me, what it's about is, it's about finding that philosopher's stone. And it's about going inside and looking for it. And about the cycle of problems that come back, and then we have to deal with them again, but they'll go away and we just keep working on it. And it goes, "Now I'll find peace of mind. I finally found a way of thinking. I tried the rest, but I found the best. Stormy day won't see me sinking." So he found a way to think that's a positive way for him, that can overcome these negative times and these things. And he put the other thoughts and ways of thinking away. He says, "Dare to look, face the test. On the eve when you set sailing, what you've learned, what you've earned, ship of joy will stop you failing." You know, if we want to find this stone, we have to dare to look. And we have to rise up to taking the test. It's difficult. It's so hard sometimes, I know. But I feel like if you can uncover one little shiny piece of this philosopher's stone, it will change the way that you think about everything. Because if you can find this stone, you don't need anything else. You have true happiness. You have true joy. You have true everything. That's why it's gold. That's why it's these valuable things. Because you don't need to search for anything else. It's better than all of those things. He says, "Wind is high, so am I, as the shore sinks in the distance. Dreams unfold, seek the gold, gold that's brighter than the sunlight. Sail away, see the day, dawning on a new horizon. Gold's in sight, shining bright, brighter than the sun that's rising. 3,000 sails on high are straining in the wind, a raging sea below. Is this voyage coming to an end?" Just like our trials, eventually they end. But there's another raging sea right behind probably to deal with. But that's what we do here. I love all of you so much. You are my true family. And I miss every one of you when you're not here. And I love seeing all of you here. And I appreciate you all. I love you. I bless you. Thank you very much for letting me speak today. Thank you.